Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the pantograph of Friday, February 6th, 2026. We turn first to page one, where the main story is about pet adoptions titled Puppies Play to Win Hearts. Groups hope to score forever homes in Super Bowl week. This story is datelined Normal. While many are looking forward to the Seattle Seahawks and the New England Patriots facing off on Sunday, Bloomington Normal pet rescue agencies are hoping to score with adoptions at Puppy Bowl-themed events this weekend. We definitely get to highlight the puppies that are available for adoption. It is a big adoption event as well for those puppies, so families can come, meet those puppies ahead of time that are in foster care that they cannot see at the shelter, said Olivia Speaker, adoption manager for Pet Central Helps. We definitely see an increase in puppy adoptions from that, and it is also a great way for us to connect with the community outside of just doing adoptions with them. The Humane Society of Central Illinois is hosting a Rescue Bowl adoption event for the first time this year, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday at 423 Kays Drive in Normal. There will be 13 dogs, 56 cats, and about four other small animals available, along with snacks, giveaways, and other activities. The event is in partnership with the Residence Inn by Marriott in Normal, with support from Marriott Bonvoy, which is an official sponsor of the Puppy Bowl that airs Sunday on Animal Planet. HSCI is participating along with the New York-based North Shore Animal League, which airs its Sunday Rescue Bowl on the Great American Family Network. The goal is for us to get as many adoptions as we can this whole week, but have the pinnacle be on Saturday, and we're partnering with the Residence Inn locally. They're going to bring some snacks and football food for us, so we're going to have just a little party and be able to kind of celebrate all together, Nicole Monson said, Director of Community Engagement for the Humane Society of Central Illinois. Monson said the shelter has a number of dogs right now because it has halted dog intakes while renovating the dog floor, and the Humane Society raised money for the renovations over the holidays. The North Shore Animal League also offers grants to organizations that post the most adoptions based on shelter size, and it monitors social media pages for the best adoption story. Monson said they are trying to promote the social media aspect, even editing photos of the animals to show them wearing football or cheerleading gear. Monson recommends those interested in potentially adopting on Saturday fill out an application online ahead of time so they might be able to take the animal home with them on the day of the Rescue Bowl. I really enjoy having small community events like this. I mean, we don't have like a giant building where we could have a huge party or anything, but it's really fun to have these little events where we can invite the community to just come in, she said. It's really good for the animals. Just the more exposure the animals get in the shelter to other people, the better, the easier it is for them to find a home. Kind of a win-win for everybody. Monson said she is hoping to have about 25 adoptions total this week. The shelter already had three as of Tuesday. The Humane Society's adoption floor is open from noon to 7 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays, noon to 5 p.m. Wednesdays and Fridays, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturdays. The mission is to find loving forever homes for unwanted and abused pets, Monson added. The shelter takes in pets from animal services and tries to save as many as possible from euthanasia. In addition to the Rescue Bowl, the Humane Society of Central Illinois also has an ongoing fundraiser, Love Stinks, in which people can donate $5 and shelter staff will write a name or a problem the person would like to forget on a paper heart and put inside the litter boxes. The Humane Society also is hosting a Spaghetti and No Balls drive-through takeout fundraiser from 4 to 6 p.m. Thursday, February 26, with A to Z catering food. Grove Street Bakery cookies will be for sale on site while supplies last also. The $30 take-home meal will include spaghetti with meat sauce and garlic bread. The proceeds support the Humane Society's spay and neuter programs, and the event is for pre-orders only. The Humane Society also offers birthday parties for the community. Pet Central Helps is hosting its annual Puppy Bowl event, inspired by the Animal Planet program, from 1 to 3 p.m. Sunday, February 8th, at Youth Build McLean County at 360 Wiley Drive in Normal. Pet Central Helps partners with Youth Build by renting the building from the agency. Speaker said the organization took a break from the event a couple of years ago, but started it up again last year. She said they had a ton of fun, so they wanted to do it again. About 100 to 150 people came through the event last year, and while they did quite a few adoptions, Speaker said she is hoping for even more this year. Free, family-friendly activities will be available, such as coloring and craft tables, bake sale items, and a raffle. Speaker said she believes the event would be a great way to get kids out of the house during the cold weather. There will be about 20 puppies available for adoption who will be facing off during the event. A different litter will face off with football-themed toys during each of the four quarters. So we have different litters kind of facing off against themselves just to protect health and immunity standards, Speaker said. One of them of those is known as the Spice Litter, she said. They're a really cute group that's going to be going out to play. We actually rescued the mom off of the euthanasia list. So to go from a euthanasia list to having puppies play in the puppy bowl is a really big difference, and I think that really highlights what a difference we make here, she said. It's really just watching puppies play around. It's super cute. Nobody's scoring too many points. It's usually a tie at the end. Pet Central Helps has foster groups that take moms and puppies, often ending up with as few as 2 to 3 at a time, or as many as 10. The organization also works with people who foster adult dogs and kittens. Additionally, Pet Central Helps is one of the only low-cost spay and neuter packages for for cats in the area, with packages for $125 when those services can cost anywhere from $400 to $900. The organization will also be launching a similar program for dogs in the coming weeks. This weekend, Pet Central Helps Cats will be at PetSmart in Bloomington for an adoption event, which it will host every Saturday. Speaker said the organization also operates a pet food bank with several additional resources available because as much as she and her teams are focused on adoptions, they're equally as focused on keeping pets in their homes with their people. I'm the adoption manager, so I love to do adoptions. It's something that just like lights up my world. I love to connect people to animals that really bring them to so much joy. So I'm excited to see how many puppies we get to send home. Excited to see all the smiling faces. And I'm excited to get everything out there in the community even more, she said, calling Pet Central Helps the most successful adoption program in Central Illinois. And as a recap, the Humane Society of Central Illinois is having its Rescue Bowl adoption event February 7th, Saturday, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Humane Society of Central Illinois on Kays Drive in Normal. This is in partnership with Residence Inn by Marriott, featuring adoptable animals, food, swag, and more, no registration required. And Pet Central Helps is having a Puppy Bowl on Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m., February 8th, at Youth Build McLean County on Wiley Drive in Normal. It will feature a craft table, bake sale, raffle items, kids coloring activities, puppy adoptions, and more, family-friendly for all ages, and both events are open to the public. And our next front page story is about the Epstein files titled Critics Say Redaction Violated Privacy, Uncensored Nudes, Data, and Names Found. This is an Associated Press story datelined New York. Nude photos, the names and faces of sexual abuse victims, bank account and social security numbers in full view. All of those things appeared in documents the U.S. Justice Department released last week in its effort to comply with a law requiring it to open its investigative files on the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. That law was intended to preserve important privacy protections for Epstein's victims. Their names were supposed to have been blacked out in documents. Their faces and bodies were supposed to be obscured in photos. Mistakes, though, were rampant. A review by news organizations found countless examples of sloppy, inconsistent, or non-existent redactions that revealed sensitive private information. A photo of one girl who was underage when she was hired to give sexualized massages to Epstein in Florida appeared in a chart of his alleged victims. Police reports with the names of several of his victims, including many who never stepped forward to identify themselves publicly, were released with no redactions at all. Despite the Justice Department's efforts to fix the oversights, a selfie taken by a nude woman in a bathroom and another by a topless woman remained on the site, their faces in full view as of Wednesday evening. Some accusers and their lawyers called this week for the Justice Department to take down the site and appoint an independent monitor to prevent further errors. A judge scheduled a hearing for Wednesday in New York on the matter, then canceled it after one of the lawyers for victims cited progress in resolving the issues. But that lawyer, Brittany Henderson, said they were still weighing all potential avenues of recourse to address the permanent and irreparable harm caused to some women. "The failure here is not merely technical," she said in a statement. "It is a failure to safeguard human beings who were promised protection by our government. Until every document is properly redacted, that failure is ongoing." Annie Farmer, who said she was 16 when she was sexually assaulted by Epstein and his confidant, Ghislaine Maxwell, said that while her name was public, other details she'd rather be kept private, including her date of birth and phone number, were wrongly revealed in the documents. "At this point, I'm feeling really most of all angry about the way that this unfolded," she told NBC News. "The fact that it's been done in such a beyond careless way, where people have been endangered because of it, is really horrifying." The Justice Department, which blamed technical or human errors for the problems, said it took down many of the problematic materials and is working to republish properly redacted versions. The task of reviewing and blacking out millions of pages of records took place in a compressed time frame. President Donald Trump signed the law requiring the disclosure of the documents on November 19th. The law gave the Justice Department just 30 days to release the files. It missed that deadline, in part because it said it needed more time to comply with privacy protections. Hundreds of lawyers were pulled from their regular duties, including overseeing criminal cases, to try to complete the document review, to the point where at least one judge in New York complained that it held up other matters. The database, which is posted on the Justice Department website, represents the largest release of files to date in the years-long investigations into Epstein, who killed himself in a New York jail cell in 2019 while awaiting trial on federal sex trafficking charges. Associated Press reporters analyzing the documents so far found multiple examples of names and other physical information, other personal information of potential victims revealed. They also found many cases of overzealous redactions. In one news clipping included in the file, the Justice Department apparently blacked out the name Joseph from a photo caption describing a nativity scene at a California church. A nativity scene depicting Jesus, Mary, and redacted, it said. And our last front page story is about Logan County, headlined "Data Center Touted But Public Wary." This story is datelined Lincoln. Developers of a proposed 500-megawatt data center on 200 acres of agricultural land near Latham spoke of economic benefits, tax revenue, and local job creation at a town hall meeting Thursday in Lincoln, but attendees were skeptical. Representatives of Hut 8, a Miami-based digital infrastructure provider, were on hand to answer questions from roughly 100 people about the project, which is estimated to be a $5 billion investment that could yield up to $65 million in property tax revenue annually. Members of the public questioned potential impact on water supplies, electricity, and farmland, as well as the overall benefit to residents of Latham. Peter Gohausen, Director of Energy Origination for Hut 8, said that over the last month, his company talked to a lot of people in the community, and while the region has some of the best farmland in America, the project can diversify some of the county's revenue away from its agricultural roots. He also noted the loss of residents who have moved to Springfield and of local jobs. What we think we have is a pathway to bring some of it back, Gohausen said. In addition to the property tax revenue, Gohausen said his company has worked with UA Local 137 plumbers and steam fitters on a commitment to union labor for construction work, which is estimated to bring about 1,500 temporary jobs. Another 200 full-time jobs ranging from engineering to information technology to security would then be created to keep the center operational, he said. Although some residents were receptive to the prospect of additional jobs and property tax revenue, many were skeptical that utility rates would not be affected. The suggestion that jobs would be created locally and not be filled by residents of Springfield and other communities outside Logan County was also challenged. One resident from Mount Pulaski said that when prime agricultural farmland is taken out of production for a project like this, it could set a precedent for Logan County to use additional land. Based on community feedback, Hut 8 representatives said they will work to provide additional data on property values in the area, potential noise levels, and the potential benefits to the people of Latham, many of whom claim that they would reap none of the financial benefits of the project. Gohausen said local benefits could be secured through a neighbor benefit agreement, which is a legally binding contract ensuring that a proposed development would have specific local benefits such as jobs and new infrastructure. Ted Allen, village president, said his community does not want the data center, but if you need a list of stuff we want, we'll give you one, and it's going to cost, Allen said. Water use and potential contamination to the Muhammad Aquifer also were addressed during Wednesday's town hall. Greg Irwin, Senior Vice President of Energy Origination at Hut 8, said there are no plans to touch the aquifer, and the only water it would locally source would be for basic plumbing fixtures, which are estimated to run at less than 9,000 gallons a day. The data center would use a closed-loop cooling system, which uses a fixed volume of coolant that would be shipped into the community. In the event of power grid emergency events such as rolling blackouts or severe weather, Irwin said Ameren would ask large industrial users with backup power like Hut 8 to shut down rather than let hundreds of thousands of residential houses go without power. In terms of order of operation, Ameren will always cut us off first, Irwin said. Logan County is in the process of drafting its own policy for data centers as a special use in agricultural districts, which was originally modeled on Sangamon County's regulations. The Logan County project is not the only data center request in central Illinois that has faced backlash. Roughly 40 miles away from the construction site, a growing number of Tazewell County residents are rallying against a data center project on the 1,000-acre Lutchkin Farm property, which was purchased by the city of Pekin in 2024 for the purpose of future economic development opportunities. Last April, the city council approved the sale of 321 acres to Western Hospitality Partners, a New York City-based developer of large-scale data centers, for $4.5 million. Although details are scarce, a Facebook group called the Tazewell County Data Center Opposition has more than 3,000 members. An online petition on change.org to stop the data center has more than 1,000 signatures as of Wednesday. During Tuesday's McLean County Land Use and Development Committee meeting, an amended zoning ordinance for data centers was recommended to the full board. Phil Dick, Director of Building and Zoning for the county, said the board approved an initial ordinance on data centers in October. However, the only standard that was established was that a proposed data center shall comply with the noise limits established by the Illinois Pollution Control Board. But after additional conversations with board members, it was decided that it would not be appropriate for data centers to be in agricultural districts, and therefore a revised zoning ordinance would limit a data center's location to manufacturing districts. Committee Chair Lee Klein said the revised language gives the county meaningful oversight while remaining flexible enough to deal with changes to such a rapidly developing industry. The intent is to require applicants to clearly document the impacts of their specific proposals and to give the Zoning Board of Appeals and the County Board the ability to evaluate each project on its own terms based on its size, technology, location, and potential impacts, Klein said. For questions related to Logan County's data center project, you can contact the county at datacenter@logancountyill.gov or the developer at logancountydatacenter@hut8.com. And we turn now to some local and state news. This story is headlined, Kilo of Cocaine Leads to Prison, Dateline Bloomington. A 40-year-old man from Chicago has been sentenced to 30 years in prison after he pleaded guilty to delivery of a controlled substance. Leonard Saunders was charged with this Class X felony offense after he was pulled over by McLean County Sheriff's deputies on April 13, 2024, while traveling north on Interstate 55. He was driving above the speed limit, prompting police to pull him over, and when they conducted the traffic stop, police discovered he had an outstanding warrant from Cook County, according to the probable cause statement. During a search of the vehicle, police found more than $10,000 in small bills wrapped in bands and equipment used to package and sell drugs. Along with the packaging materials, police found approximately 1.1 kilograms of a substance that field tested positive for cocaine. Initially, Saunders also was charged with unlawful possession of a controlled substance, a Class 1 felony, and controlled substance trafficking, also a Class X felony. However, following his open plea on November 5th, the state dismissed those two counts. On Tuesday, February 3rd, Saunders appeared before Judge William Yoder, who imposed the 30-year sentence, of which Saunders must serve 50% with credit for 5 days served and 18 months of mandatory supervised release after his prison time. The prosecution was represented by Assistant State's Attorney Alexandra Williams, and the defendant was represented by Attorney David Sargent, who could not be reached for comment concerning his client. And this next story is headlined, Man Nets 13 and a Half Years for Burglary, Dateline Bloomington. A man from Chicago has been sentenced to 13 and a half years in prison after he was found guilty of a residential burglary in Bloomington in 2024. Johnson, 36, was charged with one Class 1 count of residential burglary for an August 21, 2024 incident in which he was accused of entering a woman's residence through a screen door in her living room. The woman said she was only half-dressed when the defendant broke in and her young child was present. Once she was dressed, she chased Johnson outside. The victim identified Johnson among a list of suspects brought forward by the police. He was found guilty in a November 12th jury trial and appeared before Judge Jason Chambers January 30th for sentencing. Johnson must serve at least 50% of the sentence and then 1 year of mandatory supervised release. In addition to this sentence, Johnson was sentenced on another burglary case from 2023 in which he was charged with two Class 2 counts of burglary. Initially, he was given probation on this case, but after violating the terms of probation, probation was revoked and he was resentenced. In the older case, Johnson was sentenced to 7 years in prison with credit for 600 days served, to be followed by 1 year of mandatory supervised release. This sentence will be served concurrently with his 13 and a half year sentence. And during Friday's hearing, the state was represented by Assistant State's Attorney Spencer Chikahisa, and the defendant represented himself. And this story's headline, Electronics Recycling Saturday in Normal. Self-service electronic recycling drop-off will be available for McLean County residents from 8 a.m. to noon, Saturday, February 7th, and continuing on the first Saturday morning of each month. These hours are available in addition to regular drop-off hours, 7 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., Monday through Friday, at Normal Public Works at 1301 Warner Street. Residents are asked not to drop off items outside of open hours, and drop-off is not available for residents outside of McLean County or for businesses. Signs are posted to indicate where items should be placed. Items may include computers, monitors, electronic keyboards, televisions, scanners, fax machines, copiers, cell phones, video recorders, cameras, and more. Items do not have to work to be recycled. And items containing Freon, like mini refrigerators or dehumidifiers, are not accepted. You can visit normalill.gov/elecrecycle for a full list of accepted items or call Public Works between 7 a.m. and 3 p.m. Monday through Friday for more information. And Angus Group picks Carlock native. Kelsey Scott of Carlock has been named a new junior member of the American Angus Association, National CEO Mark McCulley announced. Junior Association members are eligible to register cattle in the American Angus Association, participate in programs conducted by the National Junior Angus Association, and take part in association-sponsored shows and other national and regional events, according to a news release. The American Angus Association is headquartered in St. Joseph, Missouri, and is the largest beef breed association in the world, with more than 21,000 active adult and junior members. And you can visit njaa.info for more information. And Normal to open garden plot sign-up. Avid gardeners are invited to register for community garden plots at two locations in Normal starting in early March. Town residents can begin registering at 8:30 a.m. Tuesday, March 3rd at the Normal Parks and Recreation Department office at 100 East Phoenix Avenue, and non-residents can begin registering 2 days later at 8:30 a.m. Thursday, March 5th. Returning gardeners seeking to retain their plots must register before 5 p.m. Wednesday, February 25th. All registration is in person and there is no online form. The two locations are at 1 Normal Plaza at 1110 Douglas Street and Ironwood Park at 1900 North Linden Street. There are three garden sizes with their own annual fees, a 10-foot square for $20, 10 feet by 20 feet for $30, and a 20-foot square for $40. Gardeners can begin working in their plots on April 18th, and all soil amendments or applications must meet organic standards. The community gardening rules and regulations can be found on a website for community gardens in Normal. And here is today's Flick Fact question. Today is the 125th birthday of former U.S. President Ronald Reagan, Eureka College's most famous alumnus. In every Oval Office meeting, get-together, or interview, in the white-backed chairs that fronted the famed Oval Office fireplace, Reagan always sat to the right of the guest or interviewee, and do you know why? And the answer is Reagan was deaf in his right ear. And according to his staff, also stubborn enough, at least in his early White House years, not to get a hearing aid. So the guest and interviewer always sat to his left so you spoke to his good ear. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, February 6th, 2026. I look forward to reading part two with you next.